Take your Bibles, if you will, and turn to Mark chapter 2. Mark chapter 2. It is frequent in the world in which we live for there to be a misunderstanding of religion. It is a common thing. I know it from my own family of origin, my brothers and my mother and father and my sister, where they have this concept that if they do well enough, then they'll be acceptable in God's sight. That those who go to church are those that are good enough to go to church. Those that are good enough to please the Lord. And therefore they go and they are still making themselves even more acceptable by going to church. It is a common misunderstanding and is completely opposite of the way the Bible talks about what we would call religion with God. It is not us trying to reform ourselves. It is God saving us and then reforming us. It is good works follow salvation, not good works lead to salvation. It is kind of the putting the cart before the horse, if you will. But there is nothing that it seems new under the sun, because it is a common misconception. It goes back hundreds of years. It goes back thousands of years, even to the days of Jesus with the Pharisees. The Pharisees had the same issue. They misunderstood their own religion. They thought it was them doing good deeds to make them acceptable in God's sight. And therefore, by doing good deeds and being a good Jew, they would gain entrance into his kingdom. They completely misunderstood what was happening. And Jesus is, in his teaching and in his preaching and in his life, revealing to them their error and teaching exactly what true religion is. The Pharisees, for the most part, never learned it. They completely missed what true religion is. And there are some that were saved, but for the most part, I think they were lost in perdition. I pray that that's not the case for us, and for those that we know and those that we care about, that they will learn what true religion is. Not the concept of doing good works to become acceptable, but the concept of coming to Christ for forgiveness from our dead works and becoming acceptable because of Him and then following after. We're looking this evening at Mark chapter 2, and we're looking at verse 18 through 22. And it says, "And the disciples of John and of the Pharisees used to fast. And they come and say unto him, Why do the disciples of John and of the Pharisees fast, but thy disciples fast not? And Jesus said unto them, Can the children of the bride chamber fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then shall they fast in those days. No man also seweth a piece of new cloth on an old garment, else the new piece that filleth it up taketh away from the old, and the rent is made worse. And no man putteth new wine into old bottles, else the new wine doth burst the bottles, and the wine is spilled, and the bottles will be marred. But new wine must be put into new bottles." You see here from verse 18 that the Pharisees had a misunderstanding. They have come to Jesus and have said something to him that contrasts them and he and his disciples. And we've said this before, but chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3 is really the Pharisees opposing themselves to Jesus and his teaching, trying to point out to his disciples or to him or to the people that he's wrong in some way. They're being very critical. And so they come to him and they say to him here, just after he has given them this phrase about him being the great physician, that he has come to heal the sick and those that are in spiritual need as opposed to those who feel they are well and healthy, they come to him and they say, "Well, John's disciples fast, and we the Pharisees fast. Why don't your disciples fast?" Now, there is a problem to start off with their question. Regardless of them not understanding true religion or not, you think about why does it matter if they can see whether someone else is fasting or not? Fasting was never designed in God's Word to be something that was on display, something that was being shown to others. It was never designed as something that would be saying, oh, I'm pious, I'm fasting today. There is actually only one command in Scripture, in the Old Testament, for the Jews to fast, and that was on the Day of Atonement. There is no other time that they were commanded to fast. But the Pharisees have taken it upon themselves to say, well, if it's good to fast on the Day of Atonement, it's good to fast more often in the year. So we should fast on any of the religious holidays. But once they went that far, they said, well, if we're fasting on any religious holiday, we should fast every week. They said, if it's good enough to fast once in the week, we should fast twice in the week. So in fact, during the days of Christ, the Pharisees and anyone who followed them fasted 2 days every week of the year. They fasted on Mondays and they fasted on Thursdays. Why they chose those particular days, I don't know, but those are the days they chose. And so they're fasting constantly. And they say this, well, we notice John's disciples fasting, and we fast, why don't your disciples fast? Well, it's easy to notice John's disciples because John is out in the public all the time. John wasn't staying in a house, he wasn't staying in a home. There was no way to hide whatever John did. He was in the public view constantly. And so when other people are sitting down to eat and John or his disciples are fasting, it becomes clear and obvious. They're not doing it for show, but it shows nonetheless. And that's okay. Now the Pharisees, they did it for show. And so they know they're fasting. They know their followers are fasting. They see John's disciples fasting and they don't understand why isn't Jesus fasting? Why aren't his disciples fasting? Don't they care about God? Don't they have some desire to draw closer and nearer to him? They can't understand what's taking place. That's the problem with having a religion that is about show, about how things appear. Is someone's always going to be doing it wrong. There's always going to be problems, whether it's the leader or the followers. There are going to be constantly wrong actions. Because no one's perfect. No one's going to follow any particular rule perfectly. The Pharisees had it backwards. They had the misunderstanding. They thought that their fasting was to show others, when in fact fasting was designed to draw closer and nearer to God. It was never something about a public display. It was about a private display between God and the individual. And we'll see that a little later on. Now Jesus responds, and his response doesn't seem incredibly clear. At least it never did to me. And it may be when you're reading it, maybe you have more insight than me. But when you're reading his response, my first impression is, what is he talking about? Because here you see verse 19, it says, "And Jesus said unto them, Can the children of the bride chamber fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then shall they fast in those days." You say, well, clearly he's talking about a bride and a groom. So the bridegroom is the husband, the one who's getting married. Why would people at a marriage fast? So what is he talking about? Well, in fact, what he is talking about is in our day, it's generally different, at least I know in the U.S. and I know in England and I think in Romania as well, the marriage celebration is much different than what it was in the Jewish day. See, in the Jewish day, they didn't have a ceremony and then a reception and then everybody leaves and the couple go on a honeymoon. What they did is everyone came to the bridegroom's house, the husband's house, and they had a feast. And depending upon the wealth of the bridegroom and his family, the feast would last for a week at least. Possibly longer. Could be 2 weeks, could be 3 weeks. So you remember the story about the wine, when Jesus turns the water into wine, and the head of the feast says, well, this is the best wine. Why is the best wine served for last? It's not because everybody's drunk, it's because everybody's drinking for a week. And you're going to run out of money. And so as the week goes along, you end up serving the things that aren't quite as good because people start to trickle home. But one thing that happens is you have a wedding party. You have your bridesmaids, and your groomsmen. Sorry, my tongue is being twisted tonight. And so you have the wedding party. Well, Jesus is saying here, and what is the Jewish custom, is those men that were there to help with the organization of the feast that would last at least a week, those were his bride men. Those were his, those bridegroom's family and children, and they were of the chamber. They were the ones helping with the feast. Guess what they never did? They never fasted. There was actually a Jewish law put forth probably somewhere in the 3rd to 4th century BC that said anybody involved in a wedding, anybody meaning involved meaning taking part, being a groomsman or a bridesmaid, was exempted from fasting in the religious calendar. Because it didn't make any sense to have part of a celebration and then to fast. You're part of the celebration. You're celebrating this marriage. And so Jesus takes this common thought, and he says to the Pharisees, when the wedding is taking place, when the special occasion is taking place, the wedding party doesn't fast. They're exempted from fasting because there's a celebration taking place. And he said, here's the celebration. I'm here. The Messiah is on the earth. He's going to be here for 3 to 3.5 years. My followers aren't fasting. They're celebrating. Now when the bridegroom leaves, when I ascend into heaven, then they can fast. Then they can go about their normal rituals of fasting because I'm no longer with them. And they're going to need to purify themselves and draw close to me because I'm not there standing next to them and sitting next to them. But if I'm sitting next to them, they can celebrate. They can glorify God. And to draw closer to me, it's not about not eating. It's saying, Lord, what would you have me to do? And him answering specifically. They had that privilege. And so he says, when the days will come, when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then shall they fast in those days. When Jesus is no longer on the earth, that's when the apostles will begin to fast. That's when they'll begin to do these things. And he follows this up. He follows this up with this old cloth and new cloth. An old wine and new wine. Parable. Because these are two small parables. And they're explaining exactly what he's talking about. See, the Pharisees had this misconception. This misunderstanding, this religion of good works, draw you closer to God. Jesus, through this parable, is saying to them, you've got it all wrong. Speaking to me draws you closer to God. And when I leave, doing it the way you're doing it is no longer the right way to do it. Not that it ever was. Things are going to be done differently. So you don't take my kids get holes in their trousers constantly. I think especially Elijah because he's a little rougher than the others. But if we patched it, which for some reason we don't do, I don't think the trousers nowadays are the same of quality. But if you patched it, you wouldn't take a new piece of cloth and put it on the old trousers. Because as soon as you washed it and that new piece of cloth shrinks, it tears the hole wide open again and actually worse than it was before. What you would do is you'd have an old pair of trousers that had so many holes in it, and you'd cut a square out of that and put it on the old trousers. Old cloth for old trousers. The same idea with the wine. If you have new wine that is just come off and just made, you don't put it in an old wineskin. Because the old wineskin has become brittle. It's become stiff. Well, what happens when wine ferments? It has gases that expand. And what's going to happen to that old brittle wineskin? It's going to pop it. And you're going to lose all of your wine and the wineskin. Now, if you have old wine, you can put it in the old wineskin. You can transfer it and put it in the old wineskin. But if you have new wine, you need a new wineskin. Because the new wineskin is elastic. And it stretches. And so it stretches with the gas and allows the wineskin to keep going. He said, well, how does this relate to what he was talking about? How does this relate to the fasting? You see, what Jesus, I believe, is teaching here is that the Pharisees misunderstood completely the idea of fasting. Because they were doing it for a show. They were doing it for a public display. You look at Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 in the Sermon on the Mount. And notice what he says repeatedly. I'm going to read this chapter and I'll maybe speak a little louder when I'm reading the highlights that I want you to notice. Verse 1, take heed that you do not your alms before men, to be seen of them. Otherwise you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet. When thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. But when ye pray, use not vain repetitions, as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Be not ye therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask him. Now skip down to verse 16. Moreover, when ye fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou fastest, anoint thine head and wash thy face, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. You see, the Jews were constantly looking out at other people's religion because they were constantly looking for their religion to be seen by men. And Jesus is talking about the Pharisees here. They're hypocrites, that they're constantly doing things to be seen of men, whether it's giving alms and helping the poor, whether it's praying, whether it's fasting. They're constantly trying to be seen, trying to make their religion known to everyone by their actions, so that they'll receive praise, so that they'll receive honor. You know, I heard of a sports star at one point who had been found out that he had been helping the less fortunate. And somebody wanted to do a story on this, that he had been doing this for decades. And he wouldn't comment. He wanted no credit for it. He said, I don't want to talk about it, and I wish you wouldn't print the story. They printed it anyway. But he never spoke about it. Whereas constantly you see in the news all the time, people, oh, praise me because I did this little charity work. Oh, praise me because I did this and this. Well, Jesus is saying that our deeds ought to be done quietly. Now, sometimes they will show, just as John's disciples fasted and there was no way to hide it. Sometimes you pray for your meal in public, there's no way to hide it. You pray in church, there's no way to hide it. But if you do those things on purpose to be seen, that's where the hypocrisy comes. And that's exactly what the Pharisees were doing. They misunderstood what true religion was. You see, they misunderstood what it means to come to God. There's a good listing of what it means to come to God in the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 5 of Matthew. It says, and he opened his mouth speaking about Jesus and taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Could you ever apply that to a Pharisee? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn, they shall be comforted. He's not speaking about mourning over the death of a loved one. He's talking about mourning over your own sin. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of God. That's not a picture of a Pharisee, is it? That's not a picture of their type of religion. That's not a picture of what people think of religion nowadays. When you see some of these groups, some of these very famous churches or very famous preachers on TV, there are many of them in the States, and they draw attention to themselves and they're doing everything to be on display. That's the opposite of what Jesus is speaking about on the Sermon on the Mount. That's the opposite of what he's talking about here in Mark chapter 2. That's trying to put Christianity into the old style religion, which was never God's style of religion. You say, well, wait a second, the Pharisees were, they knew the scriptures. Yes, they may have known the scriptures by the letter. They didn't know it by the Spirit. In Mark chapter 2, we have this conflict between Jesus and the Pharisees. And in the next passage, in the next portion, which we'll, Lord's willing, we'll be looking at next week, the disciples are going through the cornfield, through the wheat field, and they're plucking the ears of corn and they're rubbing it together and they're eating it as they're walking on the Sabbath day. And the Pharisees say, well, they're doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath day. And Jesus responds and says, haven't you read what David did? He took what was seemingly unlawful from the showbread in the tabernacle and ate it and gave to his fellows. The man was not made for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath for man. And he says there in Matthew's account, he quotes Hosea chapter 6. He says, for I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. You see, the Pharisees and the Jews had gotten wrapped up in the rituals of their religion. They'd gotten wrapped up in the very acts of religion, as opposed to the spirit of their religion. And they had missed the point that God desires mercy first, not sacrifice. He desires drawing closer to Him as opposed to burnt offerings. There's a wonderful example of this in Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58, and fascinating enough, it's talking about fasting. That's the topic of Isaiah chapter 58. I'm going to read verses 1 through 14. Which is the whole chapter of Isaiah 58. Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily, and delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness, and forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice, they take a delight in approaching to God. Wherefore have we fasted, they say, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of your fast ye find pleasure, and exact all your labors. Behold, ye fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Ye shall not fast as ye do this day, to make your voice to be heard on high. Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush, and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that ye break every yoke? Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house, when thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh? Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thy health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee. The glory of the Lord shall be thy rearward. Then shalt thou call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, here I am. Thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, the putting forth of the finger and speaking vanity. And if thou draw out thy soul to the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness be as the noonday. And the Lord shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thy bones, and thou shalt be like a watered garden, and like a spring of water, whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of thee shall be build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord honorable, shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words. Then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, And I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken it." You see, here in Isaiah, the Israelites, the Jews, were claiming to follow God. They were claiming to cry out to Him. They were doing all of the sacrifices. They were doing all of the rituals. They were performing all of their deeds. But their heart wasn't in it. There was no spirit of worship before the Lord. Because what they were doing is they were oppressing those that were weak. They were taking from those that didn't have. They weren't helping the hungry. They weren't helping the widows. They weren't helping the orphans. They were taking from those people. They were abusing their power. They were abusing their wealth. And so they said, "Well, we're fasting and you're not listening, God. Well, what is going on?" And God explains that they're fasting in the wrong manner in verses 3 and 4. "You're fasting and I don't see you because you find pleasure when you fast. You're not truly drawing close to me. You're just not eating. You're doing whatever you want. And in fact, during your fast, you're going into and removing the very things that others need, because it belongs to you. Not only that, you use this as a way to put yourself forward. You're using it for strife and debate. And to smite with the fist of wickedness. You call this a fast? That's not a fast. Showing yourself before others, that's not a fast. A fast is supposed to be, in verse 5, "Is it such a fast that I have chosen a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him?" That's supposed to be a fast. But what does God say in verse 6? "I'd rather have you do what's in verse 6 than what's in verse 5. Verse 6 is more important to me than verse 5. Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry? And that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house, when thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh." Those actions of a merciful spirit, those actions of those that know that God has given them what they have, and they should deal it bountifully to others that don't have. That's the attitude. That's the attitude that God is looking for before someone goes to fast. And if they're doing that, then by all means, come and fast before the Lord, but do it in your closet so that others don't see. Put makeup on if you have to, if you've been fasting for that many days and can go without food for that long, so that nobody knows what you're doing. Don't broadcast it. Don't make it known to anybody else. And he says in verse 8, look what happens. "Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thy health shall spring forth speedily. And thy righteousness shall go before thee. The glory of the Lord shall be thy rearward." The Lord is taking care of those folks. Why? Because they understand what the Lord is about. Because if you are a Christian, if you are a follower of Jehovah, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you know you've been shown mercy when you didn't deserve it. You know you've been given grace by God when you didn't deserve it. You know you deserve the exact opposite in every occasion. And if you've been blessed with something, why shouldn't you act the same way that He acted towards you? Why shouldn't you act towards someone who's in need the way God acted towards you, whether they deserve it or not? So often I've heard in Christian circles throughout my life, "Well, you know, you've got to really test to see if this is someone who's really deserving of it or not." The Bible never says that. The Bible never teaches that. Now, certainly you just can't go and give everything you own away, because you have to live and provide for your family. But the Bible never says that it is your responsibility to check and see if the person is speaking the truth or not when they say they have a need. What is your responsibility? To meet a need if you can. If they're deceiving you, guess who's going to take care of it? Jehovah will. He's much better at it than you or I will. And guess what He'll do for you? He'll honor what you did regardless of the person. Regardless of the worthiness of the person who received it. Because you treated it as someone that needed it, whether they truly did or not. He's looking at your heart attitude, and he'll look at that person's heart attitude as well. Let him figure that out. Let him recompense as is necessary. He's much better at it than we are. What's the attitude he wants? He wants us to give as he's given. He wants us to show mercy as he's shown mercy. He wants us to give grace as he's shown grace. You say, well, how do you get that? That's Isaiah chapter 58. Well, I'll turn over to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this: to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. You get the idea. The way of Christ is not the way of the Pharisee. That's putting new wine into old wineskins. The way of Christ is not the way of the Pharisees. That's putting new cloth onto an old hole. But you see, the old cloth and the old wineskins that were the Pharisees were never true religion to start with. They never understood their relationship with God to begin with. And those that think that religion is all about good works and earning a spot to heaven, they have no idea what Christianity is about. Because Christianity is not a list of do's and don'ts. Christianity is following Christ. It's coming and bowing yourself before him and mourning over your sin and saying, Lord, forgive me. Help me to walk after you. And you walk after him and you see what he's done and you start to do what he did. You show mercy. You dispense grace. You help those in need. So that when you fast, you're not doing it so someone else can see it. The only person that should ever know if you're fasting is someone that's living in your own home, because there's no way to hide it. It should never be something that's on display. Because true religion is between the individual and God. That's who it's between. Yes, there's certainly more to know and understand. And churches help with that. And help us understand the things we should do and shouldn't do. And give us guidance. But an individual religion is between God and that individual. And their heart ought to be right before God. The minister of a church can never answer for the heart of someone else. He can only answer for his heart. Someone sitting in a pew or a chair can never answer for the heart of the minister. They can answer for themselves. They will stand accountable before God. Each and every one of us will. For our heart. For our attitudes. For our motives. For doing the things that we do. The Pharisees, they saw Jesus and they saw his disciples and they said, you're not fasting. You're not fasting like we do. You're not fasting like John's disciples do. Why not? And he says, you've missed it. You've missed what I'm about. You missed what the scriptures are about. You missed what God's about. He desires mercy before sacrifice and the knowledge of God before a burnt offering. He wants you to treat others better than you would treat yourself. He wants you to be mournful over your sin and come before him with a contrite spirit and a contrite heart. And then to treat others as you've been treated by him. And that's a tall task. And that's enough to be going on with it, let alone trying to do things so that other people will see. But there's only one way that you can do that. And that's by knowing Christ and the forgiveness of sin through his blood. And so we point you to him. Amen.